It's me again, Hank the Cowdog. Maybe you've wondered where I came from and how I ended up on Loper and Sally Mae's ranch. It's kind of a long story. Do we have time for it? Don't forget, I'm a very busy dog. On the other hand, it's a pretty interesting story. A gang of town dogs, a mean fighting cow, and a whole bunch of other exciting adventures. What the heck, I guess we have time. Where shall we start? Well, I was born. For that, I can't take much credit. Ma did most of the work. I was one of seven pups, and we were born in a cardboard box on the back porch of Mrs. Lester's house on the outskirts of the little town of Twitchell, Texas. It was a beef box. I wouldn't have been proud if I'd been born in a grapefruit box or a lettuce box. What kind of dog would spend the first months of his life crawling around a grapefruit box? I don't know, but I didn't. I took my first breaths in a cardboard box that had been built to carry beef products, either hamburger or steaks, I don't know which. But there were no smells of fruit or vegetables in my nursery. No, sir. We came into this world smelling beef, and I'm sure that had a deep, profoundical effect on my later life. See, at an early age, I had an interest in livestock. And at an early age, I never had the slightest interest in grapefruit or lettuce. Oh, and I was always fond of bones. I give a lot of the credit to that box. Of course, my ma had some of that stock dog blood in her veins, and I'm sure that had an effect on my rise to fame and fortune. She always said that we were Australians, back to who laid the chunk, to use her exact words. And no, I don't know what that means. Well, I know what it means, but I don't know why she put it that way. It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? Back to who laid the chunk. Maybe you can figure it out. I never did. But the point is that Ma had some of that good top-of-the-line, blue-ribbon, Australian cowdog blood in her background. And no doubt, she threw me a pretty good dose of it. Even as a pup in our beef box nursery, I would try to herd my brothers and sisters. When they didn't go where they were supposed to go, I often bit them on the ears. That was fun, and it worked pretty well until my sister Maggie got tired of it. I remember that day. We were playing herding sheep, don't you see? And naturally, she was the sheep and I was the dog. I never wanted to play the part of a sheep. It always seemed undignified to me. Who wants to be a dumb sheep? Not me. But somebody had to play the sheep, and, well, it seemed good and proper. That is, we voted on it and decided that Maggie wouldn't mind being the sheep. But Maggie was a stubborn little cuss and didn't always want to behave in a sheeply manner. And on this particular day, I was forced to bite her on the ear, and she, well, bit me back. As you can imagine, that ruined the whole game. You can't play herding sheep with the sheep biting the dog. Not only does it spoil the atmosphere of good, clean fun, but it also, well, hurts. That brought an end to my playing sheep with Maggie, and that's when I branched out and started herding cats. It also left me with my very first piece of cowdog wisdom. Don't try to herd your kinfolks. Pretty good, huh? I thought so, especially when you consider that I was just a pup in a beef box. Anyways, where were we? Oh yes, herding cats. We had so many cats you couldn't take three steps without landing on one. They were all sullen, ill-tempered, and spiteful. Typical cats, in other words. And I did enjoy herding them around the porch. Not only was it a lot more fun than herding Maggie, but a guy never wanted for danger and excitement. I could wade into a nest of cats and have all six of them humped up and hissing like a bunch of cobras. You think that wasn't fun? Huh. Shucks, at the age of 7 weeks, I was ready to become a full-time professional cat dog. I loved messing with cats. But a guy did pay a price for his fun. I mean, those cats turned out to be quite a bit more, responsive than my sister Maggie. And even the little cats could deliver a blow of claws. But that just made the game more exciting. Oh, did I mention Sir Gatto? Maybe not. He was the local Tom. Big black cat with a white face and two white paws. Muscular shoulders, long black tail with a snip of white on the end. He just sat around on the porch all day, glaring at the world with weird yellow eyes and waiting for his people's servants to deliver his daily scraps. When the scraps arrived, the kittens would rush in, hissing and yowling and spitting on each other. Not Sir Gatto. He would rise from his porchly throne and walk slowly towards the plate. On all sides, cats and kittens would shrivel up and move out of his way. They might still be hissing and spitting at each other, but not at Sir Gatto. He would sniff the scraps for a while, then pick out the best morsels and chew them at his leisure. His attitude seemed to be that whichever morsels he had selected were pretty lucky. After eating, he would rise, stretch all four legs one at a time, and swagger back to his spot on the porch. Then, with a royal smirk, he would watch as the other cats rushed the plate and did what you would expect a bunch of greedy cats to do. Kiss, spit, yowl, claw, push, shove, and gulp down big chunks of food they hadn't even chewed. Typical cats. Nobody messed with Sir Gatto. Hehe. Nobody but me, that is. Let's see, where were we? Oh, yes. My puppy years and a big tomcat named Sir Gatto. He didn't scare me, not one bit. To tell you the truth, I didn't like his attitude. I watched him day after day until finally I decided to take some action. I mean, who or whom did he think he was? One afternoon, I marched up behind him, took a big gulp of air, and gave him a withering barrage of barking. Okay, maybe it was yipping. I was still in the yip-yip stage at that time, and maybe it wasn't so terrifying. But it wasn't so bad either. You know what he did? Nothing. He didn't even turn around and look at me. He just flicked his tail across my face. Hey, that did it. He could have done almost anything else, and I would have taken it like a dog. But ignoring me? No way, Charlie. That was an insult, not only to me, but to my whole family and to dogs all over the world. See, even at this tender age, I had a highly developed sense of honor. This cat had just delivered an insult to dogs all over the world, and it was my job to seek revenge. I marched up to him and delivered a savage bite to his tail. It was one of the proudest moments of my life. What did he do? Well, he turned his head around, studied me with his weird eyes, and said, this is a direct quote, he said,
"Buzz off, you fat little gopher."
Fat little gopher? Okay, that really did it. I was about to give him the thrashing he so richly deserved when he, one punch. I did four backward rolls, went off the porch, and landed in a patch of mint. I remember the sweet smell, and also the stars, red checkers, and skyrockets lighting up the vast caverns of my mind. That's when I came up with my second bit of cowdog wisdom. A cat has no sense of humor. It's true. No sense of humor. Zero. And by the way, I wasn't fat. That was the kind of cheap remark you can expect from a cat, but okay, maybe I was a little chubby. Chubby, but not fat. Pups in good health are supposed to be chubby, right? What did he expect? And I didn't look anything like a gopher either. What an insult. I brooded over that for weeks. Days. Okay, a few hours. It probably damaged my something. My sense of self-wonder. My self-esteemer. It also damaged my sense of love for cats. Ever since that day, I haven't liked them. I blame it all on Sergato, the big lug. You talk about fat. He was fat. And for the very best of reasons. He never did anything but eat and lie around on the porch and slug harmless puppies. Yes, I had bitten his tail. But he was supposed to be mature about such things. But the important point here is that he looked like a fat gopher, not me, and I blame him for all the so forth and so on. So where were we? Oh yes, the chickens. After my brief career as a cat herder, as my little legs grew stronger and as my journeys from the nursery box became more frequent, I discovered chickens. What a wonderful discovery. This place where we stayed had a nice little chicken house, and as you might expect, it was occupied by chickens. No one but a chicken could stand the smell of a chicken house. They don't have noses, you see, only beaks. And we must assume that their noseless condition helps them cope with the problems of living in a chicken house. My discovery of chickens opened up a whole new world. Never in my wildest dreams had I suspected that the world contained such creatures as chickens. Why, if I'd been in charge of creation and had set out to design a perfect toy for growing dogs, it would have come out as a chicken. First off, they're scared of dogs, even pups. And games of chase are a lot more fun when the object of the chase runs every time. That's a chicken. Second off, they don't bite or claw or fight back. Well, usually they don't. Once in a while, a guy jumps a big dumb rooster that doesn't understand the purpose of chickens, and he will bring grief in the form of pecking and spurring. But mostly, they run and squawk. What a wonderful experience that turned out to be for a young guy who was just learning the joys of dogness. In the beginning, I practiced herding chickens using my vast array of cowdog instincts and techniques. But I soon learned that running through the middle of them and scattering them in all directions was even more fun. It was the most satisfying, the most meaningful work I had encountered. And that's when I decided to choose a career as a professional chicken chaser. That's what got me in big trouble. Here's the deal. I'll just blurt it out and let the chipmunks fall where they will. See, at a fairly young age, I was accused of a terrible crime and had to leave home in a hurry. It all began one day in April. I was about half grown by then, a big-footed pup who had learned to eat dog food and scraps, but who hadn't quite given up the luxury of going back to Ma's diner, you might say, every once in a while. Ma was still giving me a little milk, but she was getting frazzled and short-tempered about it. I was out in the backyard watching chickens. All at once, the back door opened, and out walked Mrs. Lester, the lady of the house. In her arms, she carried some sort of blanket, a large, thick blanket, but for some reason, she called it a comforter. A hoosegow comforter. Why did she call it a hoosegow comforter? I wasn't sure, and I'll admit that it seemed odd. Hoosegow, you might know, is another word for jailhouse. And a comforter is something that, well, gives comfort, I suppose. A warm blanket. Hensley, if you knew someone who was living in a cold jailhouse, you'd send him a hoosegow comforter, I guess. Does that make sense? Hey, don't blame me. I'd have called it a blanket, a plain vanilla blanket. Okay, she took the blanket, comforter, whatever, and hung it on the clothesline. As I recall, she said something about airing it out. So there was the comforter flapping in the breeze. I watched it for a while, and then I noticed something suspicious. One of the local chickens approached it and began pecking at it. I pushed myself up to a sitting position and said, "Hey you, chicken, get away from that blanket and go eat some rocks." Pretty stern, huh? You bet it was. Even at that young age, I had adopted a policy of not taking trash off the chickens. But would you believe it? The chicken ignored me and went right on pecking at the blanket. I watched this with mounting anger. Who did she think she was? At last, I could stand it no longer. I rushed out and sent her flapping away. And let that be a lesson to you. Stay out of the yard and leave the blankets alone. They're not for chickens. I was in the process of beaming a piercing glare at the chicken when suddenly and all at once, a gust of wind lifted the edge of the comforter and wrapped it around my face. And whilst it was wrapped around my face, my nose became impressed upon the fabric and I smelled feathers. That's when I got my first indication that there were some birds inside that comforter. Okay, here's the deal. Mrs. Lester, the lady of the house, had hung a comforter out on the clothesline to air out. By chance, I caught a whiff of the comforter and made a shocking discovery. I smelled feathers, a sure and certain indication that birds were living inside the comforter. At first, I didn't believe my own nose. I backed away and studied the thing again. How could there possibly be birds in there? It seemed impossible. Yet when I went back and gave it a more thorough sniffing, my nose gave me the same report, only more detailed this time. There were definitely some birds in there, either chickens, ducks, or gooses. Geese. Let us say, because geese is the plural of goose. One goose, two geese. One moose, two meese. One noose, two niece. One caboose, two cabeese, and so forth. I was puzzled by this discovery. I turned and was about to go running for Ma, but then I caught myself. No, sir, I was almost grown and it was time for me to handle problems by myself. Ma was taking a nap on the porch and I didn't need to disturb her sleep. By George, I would handle this deal by myself. And when I got it all worked out, I would go to Ma and give her a full report. And she would be very proud. I turned my full attention to the flapping blanket and barked a warning. Okay, you in there. We're not sure who you are or what you're doing, but we know you're there. And we also know that you don't have permission to be there. Come out with your hands up. Pretty impressive, huh? You bet. But the mysterious birds didn't come out. Instead, the blanket moved ever so slightly, and I was pretty sure that I saw the outline of something. Mysterious birds, perhaps ducks or geese. Yes, they were ducks. I could smell duck feathers. Holy smokes, I had just stumbled onto a bunch of phantom ducks. Yes, that comforter thing was actually filled with a whole bunch of sneaking, trespassing phantom ducks. And I knew in my deepest heart of hearts that the comforter would never air out as long as it was filled with phantom ducks. I barked another warning, even louder and sterner than the first one, and ordered those sneaking ducks to climb out of there. They didn't, and at that point, I knew I would be forced to go to sterner measures. I hated to do it, but if they wouldn't come out, I had to go in. Pretty impressive, huh? I mean, most pups my age were still playing silly games, chewing on old socks and rolling balls around. Not me, fellas. I knew that a dog's life is serious business and that we were put here on this earth to do important work. This would be the stiffest challenge of my life. Rushing the comforter, busting through the outer layer, making a forced entry, and then arresting all 17 of those sneaking, trespassing phantom ducks. At this early stage in my career, I'd never gone up against 17 phantom ducks. And yes, I was a little nervous about it. But Ma had raised me to be brave in the face of instuperous odds. I think it came from the cowdog side. Bravery was just built into our line. Bravery, courage, and great intelligence. Anyways, there I was, ready to launch my first major investigation and hurl myself into deadly combat against a small army of phantom ducks. I was trembling with excitement. Those foolish ducks were fixing to learn a painful lesson about guard dogs and life. I went into a deep crouch and waited for my opening. The blanket flapped in the breeze. I programmed all the launch data and exploded right into the middle of it. I tore into that thing. Boy, you should have seen me. Ripping and slashing, clawing and biting, growling, snarling, snapping. I caught those phantom ducks totally by surprise. And you won't believe this, but I swear it's the truth. Those ducks were so terrified, they dropped their feathers and flew away. Honest, no kidding. We're talking about ducks that abandoned their feathers and flew out of there naked. I counted 17 naked ducks leaving out, and boy, you talk about a pile of feathers. We had us one heck of a pile of feathers. Oh, and get this. Not one of those naked ducks dared to come back for his feathers. They were gone. History, out of there. They wanted no more of me. I could hardly wait to tell Ma. I knew she'd be thrilled. I ran to the porch and woke her up. I guess she thought I'd come for some milk because she... Well, she didn't seem real happy to see me, if you want to know the truth. In fact, she snarled at me.
Can a poor woman sleep around here? Go away, eat some dog food, chew a bone, get a job.
Hey, Ma, it's me, Hanky. I just beat up 37 phantom ducks.
Her eyes came into focus. She stared at me.
Honey, you've got feathers all over your mouth. Now, what did you say?
At that very moment, my sister Maggie came rushing up.
Mama, Mama, someone tore up Mrs. Lester's goose down comforter.
Beaming with pride, I stepped forward. Relax, Mag. I was there and can tell you the whole story. Let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, the Hoosegow comforter. Mrs. Lester had hung it on the clothesline to air out, and I had made an amazing discovery that it contained 127 phantom ducks. I dived into the comforter, slashed it open with my teeth, and sent the phantom ducks flapping away in terror, scaring them so badly that they left all their feathers behind. I explained all this to my sister Maggie, who had turned in a bogus report to our mother, telling her that somebody had torn up Mrs. Lester's goose-down comforter. I stepped forward and gave my sister the facts in the case. Number one, it was a Hoosegow comforter, not a goose-down comforter. Number two, it had been invaded and taken over by a commando unit of phantom ducks. And number three, your brother took care of the situation all by himself. The comforter is now liberated. Mother and Maggie exchanged looks of surprise. Their gazes went from me to the pile of feathers and back to me. There was a long moment of silence. Then Ma's eyes rolled back in her head.
which seemed odd. Maggie broke the silence.
That was Mrs. Lester's expensive goose down comforter, you meathead. It was filled with goose feathers, not ducks, and you've destroyed it.
But I thought Maggie was really mad.
You've ruined my reputation. No one will ever speak to me again. I'll never have a date. I hope you're happy.
And with that, she burst into tears and ran off to the tool shed. Gee, what a weird girl. I mean, all of that over one blanket? Okay, maybe I'd made a small miscalculation, but... Hey, Ma, it was the chicken's fault. If she hadn't started pecking on the blanket, I never would have... How was I supposed to know it was filled with goose feathers? What a dumb thing to stuff inside a blanket. Ma placed a paw on my shoulder.
Well, my boy, you've really done it this time. You've got about 30 minutes to clear out of here before Mrs. Lester finds your masterpiece. When she does, she's liable to take you straight to the dog pound.
I was, well, shocked. Dumbfounded. The dog pound? Hey, Ma, it was just a joke. I was playing around. She gave me a stern glare.
Yes, and I've warned you about that. You played around once too often, I'm afraid. That was Mrs. Lester's best goose down comforter. It cost $200.
Yeah, but Ma, it was full of ducks. No kidding.
It was full of premium quality goose feathers.
Okay, maybe there was a goose feather or two, but mainly it was full of... Ma, I'm sure I smell phantom ducks in there. Mother gave me a pat on the shoulder.
Hanky, there comes a time in every family when the kids need to strike out on their own. That time has come for you.
You mean leave? Leave home? But Ma, I like it here.
Where will I go? When will I know? What will I eat? Where will I sleep? You say I'm grown, I shouldn't wait. I'm old enough to pull my freight and use the things you've always taught. But Ma, I'm having second thoughts. How will I fare? Will anyone care? Living outside, where will I hide? When winter comes and blizzards roar, you won't be waiting at the door. I guess I'll live but for a while. I think I'm going to miss your smile. It mean family behind, what will I find? I'm feeling bold, I'm feeling strong. You've tried to teach me right from wrong. A kid should go out on his own, but Ma, that means I'm leaving home. But Ma, that means I'm leaving home. I can't believe I'm leaving home.
At that very moment, we heard the back door open. Mrs. Lester stepped out on the back porch. Her gaze went straight to the... big pile of... Oh, boy. I heard her gasp.
What? Who?
There was a throbbing moment of silence. Then her gaze swept across the yard and, more or less landed on me, you might say. I tapped the last 2 inches of my tail and squeezed up a friendly smile as if to say, "Feathers? I know nothing about letters, Mrs. Lester. I know nothing about this, terrible crime. No kidding." Her eyes grew wide, then narrowed into slits. She aimed a finger at me and hissed,
"I know who did it. You did it."
How did she know? I wilted under the heat of her eyes. I had been exposed. She went on.
"That does it, puppy. You've chased my chickens, tormented my cats, and chewed up my slippers. That's it for you. I'm calling the dog catcher."
She went back inside the house and slammed the door. I turned to my mother.
"You know, Ma, I've been thinking. Maybe it's time for me to go out into the world and make my own way. What do you think?"
She nodded and began pushing me towards the gate.
"Splendid idea."
"I know you'll miss me."
"Oh, yes, of course. Goodbye, Hank."
"But, Ma, what about Maggie? I know she'll cry when she hears I've gone."
"She'll have to be brave."
"Gee, maybe I should tell her goodbye."
"I think she'll survive. Now, move along."
"But, Ma, what'll I eat? What'll I do?"
She gave me a kiss on the cheek and kept pushing me towards the gate.
"Go to the livestock auction and find a master. He'll take care of you. Goodbye, son, and try to be a good dog. Stay out of garbage barrels and don't bark at cars."
"Sure, Ma, no problem there. Bye-bye."
And with that, I sprinted out of Mrs. Lester's yard and went out to face the big wide world. I was a little scared, but also excited.
Hey, I was a big dog now. I had solved my first major case, the case of the Phantom Ducks, and was ready to find an outfit that would appoint me head of ranch security. Pretty exciting, huh? You bet. I sprinted down the road towards the town of Twitchell. 100 yards down the road, I stopped and waved one last goodbye to my Ma. She yelled something that I couldn't hear. "What? Louder, Ma."
She yelled louder this time.
"I said, quit standing in the middle of the road like a ninny. You'll get squashed."
"Oh, okay, Ma, thanks."
I moved my enormous body out of the middle of the road just in time to avoid getting squashed by a pickup.
Huh? Yikes. It was the Twitchell dog catcher.
And all at once, I felt a powerful desire to move along, shall we say. I had been accused of terrible crimes and had been forced to flee from my home, and now I went plunging into a new life as a dog of the world. I just hoped that Ma and Mag would survive the tragedy. Poor Mag was probably crying her eyes out in the tool shed, and I had every reason to think that tears were streaming down Ma's cheeks too as they both tried to cope with the loss of their beloved son and brother. Pretty sad, huh? It wouldn't be easy for them. Not only would they have to live under the shadow of all the false charges against me, but they would have to face tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow without, well, me, you might say. What a blow, huh? You bet it was. But deep down, they were tough, and I knew they'd find a way of coping with their sorrow. It was sad, very sad, but I'll tell you something if you won't blab it around. Promise? Okay, here it is. When a guy exits a scene and the women folk are crying, it's no bad deal.
I mean, if they were laughing and dancing in the streets, it might make you wonder. But that's not what we had here. Far from it. We had all the ladies in my family. I guess we've pretty much covered that. The point is, it was a sad occasion when Ma had to give up her son and Mag was torn away from her sainted brother. And with their sobs ringing in my ears, I pointed myself towards town and tried to put some distance between myself and the, goose feather conspiracy and the dog catcher. I definitely wanted no part of the dog catcher. I had heard chilling stories of puppies who had ended up in his truck. I sprinted all the way to town, a distance of a mile or so, and didn't dare slow down until I had reached the outskirts. Outskirts, whatever. Until I reached the first line of houses and the first signs of paved streets. You probably think I took Ma's advice. Go straight to the livestock auction, get a job, be a good dog, don't bark at cars, and stay out of garbage barrels. Right. That's exactly what I... Okay, it's not exactly what I did. You might say that I spent my first 3 days in town running with a bad crowd of stray dogs, goofing off, barking at cars, and, well, tipping over a few garbage barrels. And trying to stay one step ahead of the dog catcher, who wasn't amused by all the fun I was having. In fact, he seemed pretty mad about it, and he even swore a solemn oath to take me to the dog pound if it was the last thing he ever did. I wasn't too worried about it. I mean, I was young, fleet-footed, and very smart, and he had none of those qualities. Staying ahead of the dog catcher was no big... Okay, maybe it was a bigger deal than you might have supposed, because on Thursday, he chased me for 3 blocks and came very close to catching me. But luck was with me. Up ahead, I saw the Twitchell Livestock Auction and escaped the dog catcher by diving into a garbage barrel. That had been too close for comfort. As you might recall, Ma had told me to go to the Twitchell Livestock Auction, where I should try to find a Mr. or Mattress to take me in. A master or mistress, I should say, who would recognize my remarkable talents and give me a home. Well, there I was. Are we familiar with livestock auctions? Maybe not, so let me describe this one. They had their big cattle sale once a week, see? On that day, farmers and ranchers from miles around would bring in cattle and unload them on the west side of the big set of holding pens. Once the sale began, the buyers and sellers gathered inside the sale barn and sat on wooden bleachers, which were built around the sale ring. Meanwhile, the cowboys who worked in the yards would run a pen of cattle through the ring, and the auctioneer would start the bidding. When the bidding ended, the cattle were moved out of the ring and into the pens on the east side of the yard. That went on over and over for hours, sometimes all afternoon and even into the night. On sale day, the parking lot around the auction barn would be filled with pickups and stock trailers and big cattle truck rigs. And the barn and cafe would be packed with farmers, ranchers, cowboys, and cattle buyers from all over the Texas panhandle. For the country folk, sale day was the big social event of the week. But on the days before and after a sale, the auction barn was a pretty quiet place. A small crew of cowboys was there to process cattle in and out, feed hay to the cattle in the yards, and take care of whatever chores needed to be done. That's the way it was the day I arrived. I was kind of disappointed, to tell you the truth. I'd heard about all the excitement of sale day, the crowds of men eating pie in the cafe and swapping stories about horses and the weather. But what I saw was a big empty parking lot and a couple of old pickups parked in front of the barn. But none of that made much difference since I'd been forced to, take refuge in a garbage barrel behind the sale barn cafe. But the important thing is that I had escaped the wicked dog catcher, tee-hee, and never saw him again. Until the next day. I had made my way through the town of Twitchell and had reached my destination, the livestock auction on the north end of town. exactly what my ma had told me to do the day I'd left home and gone out to seek my fortune in the world. Okay, Ma hadn't advised me to tip over trash barrels, bark at cars, and heckle a local dog catcher, but the important point is that I had made my appearance at the livestock auction. Now, all I had to do was find a friend who would give me a home. I was pretty sure that would be easy. I mean, what a prize I would be for some lucky person. Handsome, athletic, loyal, humble, and very, very intelligent. The whole nine yards of great qualities everyone wanted to find in a dog, right? Yes, I was pretty sure that finding a home would be a piece of cake. The only problem was that, if you recall, I escaped the clutches of the wicked dog catcher by diving into the garbage barrel at the livestock auction. That part worked fine. The dog catcher grumbled and muttered around the barrel but never looked inside, teehee. And then he went away, still grumbling and muttering. The part of the deal that didn't work so well was that when I was ready to leave the barrel, I discovered that I couldn't get out. Did that make any sense? No. If a dog jumps inside a barrel, he ought to be able to jump out. But somehow, phooey. Suddenly I found myself stranded, shall we say, inside a stinking garbage barrel, unable to jump out and show myself to all the hundreds of people out there who were probably looking for a dog just like me. Even worse, the barrel contained no food products at all. No French fries, steak fat, bacon grease, or secondhand hamburger buns. You know what was inside that barrel? About 15 chunks of concrete. In other words, rocks. Nothing to eat. Well, you know me. I never eat rocks, and I had better things to do than... I couldn't get out. I couldn't get out! I leaped and jumped and hopped and scraped my claws against the side of the barrel, but nothing worked. This had turned out to be a totally unreasonable garbage barrel, and I was trapped inside. What a lousy turn of events. And what's a guy supposed to do? If you bark, you attract the attention of the local employees. And I had a feeling that they might not be overjoyed and proud to find a stray dog occupying their trash barrel. Let's face it. Some people take a narrow view of, well, dogs who work in the sanitation business, as you might say. But if you don't bark, then what? For Pete's sake, I might spend weeks in there eating rocks and chunks of cement until a garbage truck came and hauled me away to some awful place. Well, there I was, sitting at the bottom of the barrel and contemplating my various options for the future, when something happened that pulled my chipmunks out of the fire. A cowboy walked past the barrel and dropped a candy wrapper inside. It was a payday wrapper, if you're keeping notes on the clues and technical aspects of the case, and it had a strong peanut smell. Well, I didn't know the guy, had never seen him before, had no idea how he might respond to my presence in the barrel, but I had to do something. So I barked. One loud, sharp bark. He stopped. I heard his boots scratching the gravel as he turned around. Then a cowboy hat, an old stained cowboy hat, appeared over the rim, followed a moment later by a long nose, a pair of brown eyes, and a bearded face. Oh, and glasses. He was wearing glasses. The man was wearing glasses, not the bearded face. Well, maybe the bearded face was too, but he stared down at me. I thumped my tail against the side of the barrel and gave him my biggest, most sincere cowdog smile, as if to say, "Hi there, I'm trapped in here." He took a bite off his payday, chewed it up, and licked his fingers. "Good honk. There's a dog in the trash barrel." "Right. And I knew it looked pretty bad, and I was embarrassed about it, but..."
"You like candy?"
"Oh, sure, you bet."
"You want a bite?"
"No question about that. Sure. I'd always been fond of..."
He pitched me the last inch of the candy bar. I snagged it out of the air.
Well, see you around, Pooch.
Then he walked away. Can you believe that? He pitched me a bite of candy and walked away. Hey, wait a minute. I was marooned, trapped, abandoned to a terrible fate, and he couldn't just walk away and... Okay, relax. Remember I said he was a cowboy? Well, cowboys have a strange sense of humor. It was a joke, see? He came back and grinned down at me.
Now, if I help you out of there, it don't mean that I've filed for adoption.
Of course, I understood that.
Don't be trying to follow me around or begging for food. I'm mean and I'm gripey, and I ain't got time nor place for a stray dog.
Could we get this over with? He lifted me out and set me on the ground. He looked down at me through squinted eyes.
You ain't much to look at. I'd say you're about 1/10 cow dog and 9/10 roundworms. Well, I've got cattle to pen. See you around, Pooch.
And with that, he walked over to the pens where his horse was tied to the fence. That's how I met Slim Chance. After rescuing me from the garbage barrel, Slim climbed on his horse, rode out into the stockyards, and went back to work, penning cattle. I took this opportunity to walk around and check out the action. I had noticed, don't you see, that trucks and stock trailers were pulling up on the west end of the stockyards and unloading cattle. It appeared that tomorrow might be sale day, and some of the country folks were bringing in their stock the day early. I trotted down the main alley, slipping under big wooden gates, and made my way to the west end. And what do you know? There was the very same cowboy, Slim Chance. He was logging in the consignments on a sheet of paper and sticking numbered tags on the back of each animal as it ran down the loading chute. Well, I'd always had this little dream of working with livestock, and this seemed as good a time as any for me to learn the business. I mean, I'd always hoped for a ranch job, but what the heck, signing on with an auction outfit might not be such a bad deal either. It was a place to start. So I sat down in the middle of the alley and watched the cattle coming out of the loading chute. I studied them carefully, knowing that if I made a good impression here, Slim just might take me on as an employee. Boy, wouldn't Ma be proud to hear that I'd gotten a good job at the...
Hey, get out of the alley.
Huh? Oh, Slim was yelling at the cattle. Yes, Ma would be very proud. For weeks, she'd been hinting that it was time for me to leave home and get a job. And come to think of it, some of her hints had seemed downright rude, almost as though... Well, almost as though she'd wanted me to leave or something.
Hey, bozo, you're blocking the alley.
Slim again. He must have been having some trouble with the cattle. But anyway, my thoughts returned to my dear old Ma, and I found myself remembering our tear-soaked farewell. How she had cried and wept at my sudden departure. How she and Mag had begged me to come back for a visit. How she... Huh? A man was standing over me, a tall, skinny fellow in a cowboy hat. His hands rested on his waist, and there was a, well, dark expression on his face, so to speak. Had I missed something? I mean, maybe in the process of remembering my dear old Ma, my thoughts had wandered and...
Will you move your carcass?
I turned my head to the left, then to the right. Seeing no other carcasses in the immediate area, no one but me and Slim, I began to wonder if perhaps... Oh, was he speaking to me? He bent at the waist and brought his face almost to the end of my nose. I wrapped my tail and gave him my most sincere look of sincerity.
Pooch, are you trying to help?
Oh, sure, be glad to. You bet. Anything at all.
You'd help me a whole bunch if you'd move out of the middle of this alley so's I can drive them steers down to pen 31.
Sure, no problem.
I not only moved out of the alley, but when the cattle went past, I darted my head between two boards in the fence and barked at them.
Pretty impressive, huh?
I thought it was, especially when you consider that this was my first day on the job. I hoped that he would notice. Well, the minutes passed and stretched into hours. I watched and observed every detail of the unloading and pinning procedures and committed it all to memory. Sitting there in the warm sunlight, I was learning the cattle business from top to Mergles Giver Brookshaver, from bop to snark amidst the warm, honking turnip greens of the left.
Perhaps I dozed. Who wouldn't have dozed in the warm sunshine? But the important thing is that when I heard the thunder of hooves on the ground nearby, I came ripping out of sleep and leaped to my feet, and suddenly I saw two of everything, doubles. Perhaps my eyes were crossed, but that was no big deal to me. I gave my head a shake, walked around in a circle, and within seconds I had regained my gaze of purest steel. And what I saw with my gaze of purest steel was, one, an angry horned cow dashing through the alley, and two, Slim in the process of jumping over the fence, one step ahead of the cow. The farmer who had brought the cow stuck his head over the top of the fence. He was grinning.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Slimbo. Watch that cow. She'll try to get in your pocket.
Slim straightened his hat.
Thanks, Levi. I think I know why you decided to sell her.
That's right. Good riddance, I say, and good luck. See you around.
The farmer left. Slim waved goodbye and turned back to the cow. She had her head up, her ears up, her horns up, and she was watching him with an evil eye. Slim glared back at her.
You hateful old thing. What did I ever do to you? Now, I've got to get you out of this alley and into a pen for the night, so why don't you let me do my job?
He had a sorting stick in his hand, and he tapped the fence with it. When the cow heard the sound, she wheeled around and charged. She crashed into the fence and sent Slim's stick flying to the ground. Then she went after the stick, horned it, pawed it, and slobbered all over it. Slim swallowed, and his Adam's apple, or whatever you call that thing on his neck, bobbed up and down.
I guess you wish that was me, don't you? We might be forced to go to Plan B, or Plan C. Come to think of it, I ain't sure as I have a good plan for this.
I had been watching the drama with great interest, but suddenly, right in the middle of it, I was drilled on the tail section by a flea. Have we talked about fleas? They are tiny, but they inflict great pain upon a dog. And when one drills you on the hiney, you must answer the call, even if it's not graceful or convenient. I dropped everything and went to flea countermeasures. Now, when the fleas bite you on the neck or ear, it's no big deal. You just sit down and go to scratching with your hind leg. But when they go after your tail section, fellers, it takes a whole different set of procedures to shake them loose. I had to bend my body into a perfect circle and send snapping incisors back to the troubled area. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. It drew the attention of the mad cow and, well, you'll see what happened. It was pretty scary. Where were we? Oh yes, at the Twitcher Livestock Auction. I had just been drilled by a bloodthirsty flea and had gone into flea countermeasures. It takes practice and a highly conditioned body to do FCM. and a lot of your ordinary mutts can't do it. I don't know what they do. Well, yes, I do. They have to drop their hind knees on the ground and drag it with their front legs. It looks pretty silly, a dog dragging his bohunkus around, and it doesn't work nearly as well as the snapping incisors procedure. So I went to snapping incisors and launched an attack of gleaming sharp teeth against the hateful drilling flea. Boy, you should have seen me. I blew him to smithereens. But you know what else happened? When I moved, that cow caught the movement out of the corner of her eye, wheeled around, charged, and center-punched the fence, just inches away from where I was sitting. Lying down, actually. See, it's hard to hold a sitting position when you're in the shape of a donut. And sometimes you, well, topple over backwards, which is pretty much what I did. But the important thing is, two important things. First, I blasted the flea, and second, the cow hit the fence and not me. It gave me a little scare, I'll admit. I mean, I'd been sitting there minding my own business and thinking of fleas, and suddenly this insane 1,200-pound cow was inches away from me, breathing hot vapors in my face and threatening to skewer my heart on a horn. Pretty scary, huh? You bet it was. But I'm proud to report that I recovered my composure and gave her a stinging response. You know what I did? You'll be impressed. Even I was impressed. I stuck out my tongue at the old witch and said in a firm, thundering voice, "Your mother's an ugly toad, so there!" Got her told, didn't I? I shot a glance at Slim, who was still perched on top of the fence, to see if he'd caught the show. His face bloomed into a big grin, and he said,
"By Nettie's, I think I just discovered Plan B."
Oh, really? Great. This was turning out to be a good day for all of us, wasn't it? I was in the process of smoothing down the hair I had mussed in the anti-flea procedure when I heard, well, a voice. Slim's voice, to be exact.
"Hey, Pooch, come here. Here, puppy, puppy. Nice doggy."
My ears shot up. He was calling me. I had been singled out for special awards and honors. Slim had noticed my cleverness and bravery, and now he was calling me to the front to receive my awards. Holy smokes, what a deal! And don't forget, this was my first day on the job. Well, I was almost overcome by emotion and so forth. I mean, this is the kind of deal every dog dreams about. I guess we all have our secret fantasies, and this one was almost too perfect to be real. Surely I didn't deserve such an honor, and I was humbled beyond recognition. Beyond description, I guess it should be. Humbled beyond description, but also proud. Very proud. I rose from my seat and glanced around at the faces in the audience. Every eye was wide and filled with admiration and adoration, and I could almost hear them whispering, "There he is. That's him, Hank the cow dog. He's so young and handsome, so brave and strong." No kidding, I almost heard and saw those things. It was a very emotional moment. One of the most emotional moments of my life. Most emotional, that is, in my whole so forth. And I was almost overcome by proudness and humility. Holding my head at a proud angle, I slipped under the bottom board of the fence and began my march to the... Yikes. I had forgotten about the cow. And fellers, here she came, the hateful old rip. I mean, this was the proudest moment of my life. There I was, marching up to the front to receive my many awards. But did she care? Did she show me the slightest bit of respect? Oh, no. She was totally selfish and mean. And when I set foot in that alley, she took it upon herself to spoil the ceremony. She pawed up 2 shovelfuls of dirt, lowered her nose to the ground, shook her horns at me, and then she came a-hookin'. We're talking about freight train here. A freight train with horns and a nasty disposition. My eyes and her eyes met for just a second. I could see that she was serious about disrupting the awards banquet, and that it would be foolish of me to give her the thrashing she so richly deserved. Here she came. I fired off two shoulder barks and hauled the mayo out of there. I dived under the bottom 2x6 board and made it out of the alley just in the nickering of time. One step ahead of the posse, as they say. She bashed into the fence again and gave herself a bloody nose. I took up a defensive position behind Slim's legs, you might say, and then began blasting her with a stinging barrage of barking. There, you mean old hag. Let that be a lesson to you. Next time, you'll get more than a bloody nose. I just might tie those horns in a knot and stick them in your ear. And don't forget that your mother was nothing but a cow. Yes, sir, I got her told, and she deserved every bit of it. Imagine her thinking she could disrupt our awards ceremony with her childish displays of temper. Ha! She'd think twice before she ever messed with me again. Well, as you might expect, old Slim was deeply impressed and proud. He reached down and scratched me behind the ears. Nice work, pup. You did so well on that little chore. I'm gonna give you a big promotion. A promotion? No kidding? Wow! My first day on the job. If you recall, I had taken a job at the Twitchell Livestock Auction, working with my new pal, Slim Chance. And on my very first day on the job, Slim had given me a big promotion. He smiled down at me and said, "Yep, as of this moment, I'm promoting you to Chief of Cowbait." Chief of Cowbait? That was an odd name for such an important position, wasn't it? Oh well, what's a name? A name is only what we call something. What really matters is what it is, and I knew this was going to be... Why was he slipping the loop of his catch rope around my middle and picking me up off the ground? Perhaps he was going to carry me to the awards... Huh? You won't believe this. What a cheap trick! Did you think he was carrying me to the awards banquet? Ha! I should have been so lucky. All at once, the meaning of my job title came into focus. Chief of Cow Bait. He used me for cow bait. That's what he did. He carried me about 20 yards to the east, see, until we reached the pen where he wanted to park the mad fighting cow. He unlatched the gate and swung it open. Then, with the noose of his rope around my armpits, he lowered me into the alley. By this time, I'd figured out what was going on. I had been tricked and misled, and he wasn't kidding about this. I gave him wounded looks. That didn't work. So I gave him scorching glares. That didn't work either, so I went to kicking and scratching with all four legs, and you can guess how much good that did. Zero. The cow saw me, and her eyes lit up like... I don't know what. Like headlights on a train. Like two burning embers. Like the glowing eyes of a terrible monster. She shook her horns, bellowed, pawed the ground, and started down the alley, gaining speed with every step. Suddenly, I felt a need to make peace with the old... with Mrs. Cow. Hey, listen, forget what I said about your mother. Maybe she was a cow, but I'll bet she was a real pretty cow. Honest. I'm being very sincere. Yikes, she had blood in her eyes and steam shooting out of her nostrils. I hit afterburners and went streaking into the pen with her right on my tail. I was one step away from being dog meat, but suddenly the rope pulled tight and I felt myself flying through the air. I landed on the ground outside the pen, and in a flash, Slim bailed over the fence and slammed the gate shut. He grinned and dusted his hands together.
Now, ain't that a pretty piece of cowboy work?
He climbed over the fence and joined me. I was, well, sitting there, shaking so hard I couldn't stand up. He knelt down beside me and removed the rope. Then he patted and rubbed my head. I refused to look at him. Cowbait. I was wounded beyond repair. My pride, that is. My dignity. My dignity had been smashed and shattered beyond all repair, and it would take a lot more than a few rubs and pats to get me over it.
Now, Pooch, don't be bitter. We got her pinned, didn't we?
Oh, sure, right. We got her pinned and almost got me shish kebobbed. He scratched my ears.
Would it help if I said you were a real hero?
No.
Would it help if I said we were going to be pals now?
No. The damage was just too great. He reached into his pocket and fished out a candy bar.
Would it help if I gave you a bite of my supper?
Well,
tell you what, we'll split this in 50-50. Now that's a good deal. Yes, it was pretty good, I had to admit it, and... Okay, what the heck, I'd never been one to carry a grudge.
He broke the bar in half and gave me my portion. I woofed it down. Within minutes, my dignity had healed over and we had become the best of pals. But then he ruined it all when he said,
"But I can't take you with me. I'm moving to Montana next week."
What? I stared at him with hurt-filled eyes. Montana? What a lousy deal. I'd spent the whole day helping Slim Chance at the livestock auction, and had even risked my life to save him from being mauled by a mad horned cow, and after all of that, he had informed me that he was moving to Montana, and I couldn't go with him. It broke my heart. There, for a few golden hours, I had thought that, well, that I'd found a true friend, an honest cowboy who would take care of me and give me a home. But then he had dashed my hopes and broken my heart into 87 pieces. So there I was, just another stray dog in a strange town. A dog without a country. A dog without a home. All at once, I didn't feel so brave anymore. I mean, I had been forced to leave my family and home, had been thrown out into the cold, cruel world, and now... I hung around the livestock auction until quitting time. I don't know why. Yes, I do. I hung around because that's where I was, and I didn't have any place better to go. At 6 o'clock, Slim went into the office and drew his wages for the day. I was sitting outside when he strolled out of the office. My eyes came up and I gave him a mournful look. He saw me and held up a wad of cash.
$25 whole, Pooch. You didn't know that you had a wealthy friend, did you?
No. He paused for a moment, and his smile faded as he looked down at me.
Now, don't be giving me them sad eyes. I already told you I'm moving to Montana, and I can't take you with me.
Yes, I understood. It was nothing personal. I would get over the crushing disappointment. Eventually, he reached into his shirt pocket and brought out something that looked like a dead mouse.
Would a bite of beef jerky make you feel better?
No, thanks. Time would probably wound my heels. In 20 years, it would all be just a memory. He bent down and rubbed me behind the ears.
Sorry, Pooch. I wish I could take care of yourself.
And with that, he left me sitting in the rubble of my broken heart and walked to an old pickup parked nearby. He gave me one last glance, then stepped into the cab. Pretty tragic, huh? You bet. It was so sad that I didn't even hear the pickup that screeched to a halt at the curb behind me. I hardly noticed that a man leaped out and ran straight towards me, carrying a net in his hands. Then, before I knew it, I had been captured by the dog catcher, who threw me into the dog cage in the back of his pickup and slammed the door shut. Then he leaned towards me and gave me a wicked grin.
Thought you could give me the slip? Jimmy Joe always gets his dog, son, even if it takes a while. I've got a room for you at Devil's Island for dogs.
So this was the way it would end? I would spend the rest of my life, my short life, I would spend the rest of my short life locked up in a lonely prison cell, an outcast, a common criminal, a disgrace to my poor old mom who had tried to. I was glad Ma wasn't there to see what had become of me. Then I heard a man's voice say,
"I see you've got my dog."
I lifted my eyes and looked toward, huh? Slim Chance had gotten out of his pickup and was standing in front of the dog catcher. And unless my ears had deceived me, he had said. All at once, I was very interested in this conversation. I sat up straight and listened. The dog catcher looked Slim over, from his worn-out boots to the crown of his worn-out hat.
"Since when was that your dog? I've been chasing the fool for a whole week."
"What's he done?"
The dog catcher grinned.
"Well, sir, he's had a real good time. Would you like to hear the list of charges?"
"Might as well."
I cringed as the dog catcher ticked off the charges on his fingers.
"No collars, no dog tags. No vaccination, barking at cars, chasing cats, tipping over garbage barrels, and running from an officer of the law."
The dog catcher hitched up his pants.
"I'm gonna put him away."
Slim swallowed hard and shifted his weight to his other leg.
"How much would it take to bail him out?"
$200.
Slim flinched.
"Would you take a check?"
"Not from a cowboy."
Slim nodded.
"Neither would I. Well..."
He reached into his pocket and brought out his wad of bills.
"I've got $25 cash, an old Heiser saddle, and a nice pair of RF Ford spurs."
The dog catcher glanced at me, then back to Slim. His face began to soften.
"Why would a man do that for a stray dog?"
"Well, I don't know. He's dumb, but he's got a good heart. He kind of reminds me of me."
The dog catcher heaved a sigh and looked up at the evening sky.
"If I let you take him, would you get him out of my town?"
"Yes, sir. I'm moving to Montana day after tomorrow."
The dog catcher reached out and took the cash.
"A fool and his money soon part. Take the mutt, and I hope you enjoy him."
Did you hear that?
Holy smokes, it appeared that Slim had...
Wow! Moments later, the dog catcher opened the door of my prison cell, my dark, lonely prison cell, and I leaped into the arms of my new and greatest friend in the whole world. I even gave him a big juicy lick on the face. Oh, happy day! I had found a friend and a home! And Slim even let me ride in the cab of the pickup with him. What a deal, huh? As we drove through town, I noticed that Slim was giving me long glances, as though... Well, as though he couldn't believe that he had just bought himself a new dog, I guess you might say. At last, he broke the silence.
"Well, Mama used to say that she dropped me down a flight of stairs when I was a baby. Maybe that explains it.
A flight of stairs? What was that supposed to mean? It made no sense to me, but that was okay. After a short drive through Twitchell, we pulled up in front of a shabby hotel on the edge of town. Slim shut off the motor and looked down at me.
Mrs. Grundy don't allow dogs, so you'll have to camp in back of the pickup.
Hey, no problem there. The back of the pickup would be just fine. Shucks, I was so happy to have a friend, I didn't care where I slept. Slim said goodnight and went inside the hotel. I curled up in the back of my new pickup and launched myself into a deep, peaceful sleep.
Yes, sir, I was one lucky dog, and it sure didn't bother me that I had to sleep outside in the...
But then, sometime around midnight, I saw a monster. So there I was, curled up in the back of Slim's pickup and as happy as a mog in a hog hole. As happy as a hog in a molehill. As happy as a hog in a mud hole, let's say. And everything was hunky-dory. Couldn't have been better. I was the happiest, luckiest dog in the whole world, and it didn't bother me at all that Slim was inside the hotel, sleeping on a nice soft bed, while I was out in the... To be real honest, the floor of Slim's pickup bed was pretty hard. But I'm not the kind of dog who complains about every little thing. No, sleeping in the pickup was just fine until... I heard this sound, see? At first I thought it was an owl.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
And I tried to go back to sleep. But then I heard it again, and this time, I wasn't so sure it was an owl. I mean, it was kind of a creepy sound. Very creepy. I lifted my head, narrowed my eyes, and peered into the darkness. I heard the creepy sound again, and this time I also saw something. It moved. Something was out there in the darkness, moving around and making spooky sounds. And the longer I looked and watched and listened, the more convinced I became that this was some kind of monster. Have we discussed monsters? Maybe not, but maybe we'd better. I don't like monsters. Never have. Monsters and I don't get along. And when a monster comes creeping into my territory, I don't just sit there looking simple. I bark. And that's just what I did, fellers. I spread all four legs, got a good firm grip on the bed of the pickup, and began firing off round after round of massive anti-monster barks. Big barks. Huge barks. Barks that rolled into the distance and were certain to incapacitate any monsters that were lurking around out there in the... Huh? Off to my right, I heard the sound of... Was that a window being opened? Yes, someone or something was opening a window. So I swung the barrel of my barking cannon around, took aim at the new sound, and... Shh!
Shut up that barking, you dingbat.
Huh? Dingbat? All at once I... Okay, we can relax for a moment. You probably thought that I had taken aim at a vicious dog-eating night monster, right? There for a second, I thought so too, but... Remember Slim Chance, the cowboy? My new friend? Well, he had been asleep inside the hotel, see? And he must have heard the sounds of the battle raging outside his window, see? And he... Okay, maybe there wasn't a monster, but let me hasten to point out...
You're gonna get me thrown out of this hotel if you don't hush up that noise.
Well, I... Sure, no problem. I could hush up. The window slammed shut. But he didn't need to yell and screech at me. I mean, dogs have feelings, too. Anyway, there I was in the back of Slim's pickup in the middle of the night. and I couldn't go back to sleep. What kind of dog can go back to sleep after he's fought off an army of night monsters? Not me. And suddenly it occurred to me that, well, if I hopped myself out of the back of the pickup and walked 10 steps to the north, I would be, well, right under Slim's window, shall we say. And then it occurred to me that if I stood under Slim's window and went into moaning and whimpering procedures, Slim might hear me and...
It worked.
I won't say that Slim was happy about it, but the procedure proved to be a howling success, so to speak. After just 2 minutes of extra pitiful moans, the window flew open again. Slim stuck his head out the window and hissed, "Get in here, you meathead." It appeared that he had begun to experience some feelings of guilt about leaving his loyal dog outside in the dark, don't you see, and had, well, invited me to join him inside the hotel. What a deal, huh? You bet. I coiled my massive legs under me and leaped through the open window as gracefully as a deer. I was thrilled to be there. Slim was thrilled to... Okay, maybe Slim wasn't so thrilled, but the point is that he had changed his position on dogs in the hotel. And that was good enough for me. Now lie down on the floor and don't make a peep. If that old bat Miss Grundy finds out you're in here... He didn't finish the sentence, but he didn't need to. Hey, I understood. This was to be a stealth mission. Not a sound, not a peep. I scratched up a soft spot on the rug and plopped down. Yes, this was the life. This was true happiness. No dog could have asked for more. I slept the whole night through, in spite of all the... Did I mention that Slim snored in his sleep? He did. And we're talking about truck noises, buffalo, hogs. I had never thought that one cowboy could make so many weird sounds in his sleep. But it didn't bother me. No, sir. I slept the whole night through, and true to my word, I didn't make a peep. The terrible Mrs. Grundy never suspected a thing. And if it hadn't been for that mouse... How can I explain this so that it doesn't seem... See, I slept through the whole night through. No kidding. But then I heard this sound, this squeaking noise. I opened my eyes and saw that it was morning. And there was a mouse, a sniveling little mouse, sitting on his hind legs and squeaking at me. Mice are nasty little creatures, right? They have no business romping around in a hotel room occupied by a cowboy and his loyal dog, right? I knew that Slim would never approve of mice in his room. So you might say that I... Let me hasten to point out that I didn't make a peep. Slim had given me strict orders not to make a peep. And I followed those orders to the very letter. I didn't peep at the mouse. I gave him... the kind of robust barking we call full air horns. The foolish mouse thought he could... Gee, it appeared that someone was knocking at our door, so to speak. Banging, actually. Loud, angry bangs on the door. Slim shot straight up in bed, raked the hair out of his eyes, and croaked, "Yes." Then we heard this shrill voice outside. A woman's angry, shrill voice. It said, and this is an exact quote, it said,
"Slim Chance, I thought I heard a dog in there."
At that point, things happened fast. Slim flew out of bed and started hopping around the room as he pulled on his jeans. Once he had his jeans on, he scooped me up in his arms, ran to the closet, and threw me inside. And then he whispered, this kind of hurt my feelings, to tell you the truth, he hissed, "Meathead," and slammed the door. Gee, what had I... Okay, maybe barking at the stupid mouse hadn't been such a great idea, but he sure hadn't needed to call me hateful names. Don't forget, I hadn't made a peep. Anyway, I sat in the gloomy darkness of the closet and listened. The door opened.
Why, Mrs. Grundy, how nice to see you this...
Don't try to sweet-talk me, Slim Chance. I heard a dog in here.
A dog? Well, I'll be darned. I didn't hear a thing.
You know the rules. Mind if I look around?
Well, sure, I guess.
I held my breath and listened. She came into the room. She looked under the bed. She looked into the cabinets. She searched every corner, and then... her footsteps went back to the door.
I'm sure I heard a dog in here. I just can't find him.
Well, I snore sometimes. Maybe that was it.
Slim, I know a dog when I hear one.
Well, it was nice seeing you. Come back again sometime.
We had dodged a bullet, it appeared. Mrs. Grundy was about to walk out the door, but then... oh, boy. How can I explain this? It couldn't have happened at a worse time. I mean, I'd had the whole night to burp, and... gee, I hadn't even felt the slightest urge to burp, and yet, at that very moment, at the very worst possible time... oops. Dead silence. Then... Mrs. Grundy's voice.
What was that?
What was what?
I heard something in that closet.
Well, maybe it was a bird.
It wasn't a bird. Get out of the way.
Her heavy footsteps pounded across the floor. I held my breath. The door flew open, and all at once I found myself, gazing up into the... yikes. It was a huge 800-pound woman, and fellers, that look on her face would have curdled milk. Anyway, you might say that we, Slim and I, that is, we decided to start our trip to Montana a little sooner than scheduled, which was fine with me. I mean, I hadn't cared much for that fleabag hotel anyway. It was full of mice, you know. And the old hag who ran the place, well, she had absolutely no sense of humor, and she hated dogs. Who needs to rent a room from a woman who hates dogs? Anyway, we loaded our gear into the pickup and sort of slipped out of town. I rode up front with Slim. Things were pretty quiet up there. In fact, we might even say that the atmosphere was... well, poisonous. For the first 10 miles, Slim didn't say a word. He gripped the steering wheel with both hands and glared out at the highway. His lip was curled up like a... I don't know what, but it was curled up and looked unnatural. Then at last, he turned to me and said 2 words. You bozo. Well, at least he'd said something. I'd begun to think that... okay, he was pretty steamed up about the hotel business, but let me hasten to point out that I felt terrible about it. Honest. In my deepest heart of hearts, I knew that I had played a small but tiny role in getting him... us... thrown out of Mrs. Grundy's place. Slim must have noticed that I was suffering under a terrible burden of guilt... because after driving another mile or two, he said, oh, well, I was ready to leave anyway. After another 2 miles, he was feeling better. I've got me a cowboy job waiting up in Montana. I've always wanted to punch cows in the mountains. Oh, good. Great. Montana was fine with me. Then he looked at me and said, you know... if we're going to ride all the way to Montana together,
I need to give you a name.
Fine, my name is Hank. Slim thought about that for a minute.
How about Noodle? It kind of captures your personality.
I stared at him. Noodle? I would never answer to the name Noodle. Never. Why, I had never been so insulted. Slim shook his head.
Or how about Doofus?
Doofus? What was the deal here? Hey, if he was gonna give me a new name, at least he could come up with one that had some dignity. He gave me a grin.
Just kidding, pup. How about Hank?
Hank? Well, okay, I could live with Hank since that was my real name.
Hank the Cow Dog. How does that sound?
Hank the Cow Dog sounded okay. It sounded pretty good, actually. Yes, Hank the Cow Dog would be fine with me. I would wear the name with pride, and I had a feeling that the day would come when people all over the state of Montana would... Unless I was badly mistaken, something bad had just happened to the pickup motor. Slim steered the pickup over to the side of the road, and we rolled to a stop. For a long, throbbing moment, Slim said nothing. In the brittle silence, I whapped my tail on the pickup seat and gave him looks of greatest remorse. I mean, I knew it wasn't my fault that the pickup had quit running, but I wanted him to know that I, you know, felt bad about it. Part of a dog's job, you know, is feeling the pain of our human friends. Or if we can't actually feel the pain, we have to make them think we do. Slim drummed his fingers on the steering wheel.
I've been meaning to get this thing fixed. I thought it'd make it to Montana.
I glanced out the window. Yes, well, we'd made it the first 20 miles. That left just, well, 600 or 700 miles to go. Slim heaved a deep sigh and got out. I followed him around to the front where he opened the hood and stared down at the smoking engine. He reached in and pulled out the dipstick, held it up to his face, and squinted at it.
Oh, I knew there was something I forgot to do.
He pitched the dipstick over his head and wiped his hands on his jeans.
Well, Hank, how do you feel about taking a little hike?
A hike? Sure, you bet. Heck, it was a pretty day, and hiking around might be fun. Slim loaded up his worldly possessions, a saddle, a pair of spurs, and a grocery sack stuffed with clothes, and we started walking across the flat prairie. Sure enough, it was a great day for a hike, and I even chased a ground squirrel down its hole. Pretty impressive, huh? You bet. We must have walked for a couple of hours until we came to the edge of a caprock. Down below, we could see the Wolf Creek Valley spread out before us, green with spring grass, speckled with patches of wildflowers, and as pretty as a postcard. Slim pulled a bandana out of his hip pocket and mopped the sweat off his face.
You know, Pooch, I always wanted to be a cowboy in Montana, but I never figured on walking. You see that ranch house down yonder?
He pointed off in the distance. Yes, I saw it. A ranch house, a barn, a set of wooden corrals, and 9 horses grazing in a pasture along the creek.
That looks like a cowboy outfit to me. Let's hike down there and check it out. Who knows, they might just need a cowpuncher and a high-dollar cow dog.
And that's what we did. We made our way down the steep caprock cliffs, and 1 hour later, we walked into ranch headquarters. There we met a rancher and his wife, Loper and Sally Mae.
Over glasses of iced tea, Slim inquired if they might need some hired help. And they said, yes, by golly, they sure did. They hired him on the spot. Or, to come at it from a slightly different angle, what actually happened was this. They said they needed a high-dollar blue ribbon cow dog to take over the position of head of ranch security. And if the right dog happened to come with a cowboy thrown in, well, that might be all right. Honest, no kidding. So you might say that I was the one who landed the deal. They hired me on the spot and gave Slim a little job, you know, just so he'd have something to do during the day. That's the true story of how Slim and I found a home and how I became head of ranch security on an outfit in the Texas Panhandle. Before the sun set that evening, I had introduced myself to a little mutt named Drover and to a sneaking, scheming cat named Pete, and had put out the word to all the local coyotes, raccoons, badgers, skunks, and monsters that things were going to be a little bit different now. We had a new sheriff in town. Hank the cowdog was on the job. Case closed.
Hi, this is John Erickson, author of the Hank the Cowdog series of books and audiobooks. In the winter of 1981, I was working as a cowboy on a ranch in the Texas Panhandle. And I wrote a series of articles, humor articles, for the Cattleman magazine about the funny things that happened during my work as a ranch cowboy. In the course of writing those stories, I ran out of ideas, and I remembered two dogs and a cat that I'd known on ranches. One was named Hank, an Australian Shepherd, and Drover, a little short-haired, sawed-off, chicken-hearted little mutt, and a cat named Pete. And I put them together in a story called Confessions of a Cowdog. And it came out so well that I wrote a sequel to it the next day called Confessions of a Cowdog Part 2. Those stories have never been recorded before now, and we thought it would be fun to go back to the origin of Hank the Cowdog and do those two stories. You'll notice that in the second story, Confessions of a Cowdog Part 2, that is the first place that Hank acquired his signature opening statement for all the books. It's me again, Hank the Cowdog. All right, here's Confessions of a Cowdog, Part 1.
August 15th. My name's Hank. I'm a cowdog on a ranch in Texas. I never heard of a cowdog keeping a diary, but I'm gonna give it a try. My ma came from good stock. They were Australians and good with cattle. Ma used to say that Uncle Beanie was the best cowdog in South Texas. But she fell in with a bad crowd when she was young, and that's where she met my old man. She used to tell me about him.
He was a good old bloke, but just a wee bit south of worthless.
I asked her what it was that attracted her to him. She got a far-off look in her eyes and sighed.
We was both young and foolish. He was a dashing rogue. Hank, that daddy of yours could pee on more tires than any dog in Texas.
That always kind of stuck with me. Kind of gave me a standard to aim for. August the 25th. It was hot today. This long hair makes me awfully uncomfortable. Drover and I spent most of the morning shaded up beneath the gas tanks. I didn't think I had enough energy to move until Pete came along. Pete's the barn cat around here. I don't like him. I don't like his looks. I don't like his attitude. I don't like cats in general. I whipped him and ran him up a tree. That got me all hot and worked up, so I went up to the septic tank. It overflows there, And there's always a nice, cool puddle of water. I plopped down in it. Oh, it felt good. I rolled around and kicked all four legs in the air. When I got out, I felt like a million. I trotted down to the house just as Slim and High Loper were coming out the yard gate. I trotted up to say howdy. I rubbed up against Loper's leg and gave myself a good shake. I guess I hit him with some mud and water. Made him mad.
Get out of here, dang it!
He's a funny guy, gets mad at little things. When he's in a good humor, he calls me Hank. When he's mad, he calls me Dang It, whatever that means. I answer to both. September the 1st. It was cloudy and cool today. Drover and I were sleeping down at the corrals. Drover's my running buddy, a small, short-haired, white dog. He's got no cow sense at all, just doesn't understand the business. I think he's scared of cattle. Well, I was sleeping there, don't you see? And Drover woke me up.
Hank, get up, boy! There's cattle coming this way, a whole herd of them, coming in like elephants!
I'm in charge of ranch security. I don't allow cattle up around the place. I came out of a dead sleep and jumped to my feet. We went ripping out of the corral, me in the lead and Drover bringing up the rear. He was right about the cattle. It was a by-gosh invasion, 50, 60 head of stock. As I went on the attack, my mother's words came back to me. Bite them on the heels, bite them on the nose, take a hunk of hair out, make them shake their toes. I went straight to the lead cow. She was a horned wench and had an evil temper to boot. She dropped her head and started throwing hooks at me. Out in the pasture, maybe I would have backed away, but not this time. I was protecting the ranch. Did I mention that I'm in charge of ranch security? And I was prepared to give my life if necessary. She rolled me once with those big horns, which kind of inflamed me, don't you see? And I put the old Australian fang lock on her nose. Ma would have been proud of me. In seconds, I had that northbound herd going south. Drover was right behind me, cheering me on.
Get him, Hank! He's sick him, boy!
I sicked him, all right. But come to find out, Slim and High Loper were trying to pin him in the corral. How was I supposed to know? Next thing I knew, Loper was coming at me, swinging his rope and calling my name.
Dang it! Get out of here!
I got chased up to the yard. I don't know what happened to Drover. He just sort of disappeared when things went sour. He does that a lot. September 15th. Had a wild time last night. Me and Drover were sleeping by the yard gate. Along about midnight, he woke me up.
Hear that?
I listened and heard it. Coyotes. And they were close.
Let's run them off.
You think we should? I was still half asleep.
Heck yes. This is our ranch, isn't it?
Good point. But I don't want any rough stuff. Those guys are thugs. We loped up the hill until we could see a coyote standing in the road. A skinny, scruffy-looking little villain. I barked at him and told him to scram. We didn't allow coyote trash around our ranch. He told me to drop dead. I was ready to leave it at that, but Drover thought we had a responsibility to the ranch.
Let's give him a whipping. There's two of us and only one of him.
I counted, and sure enough, we had him outnumbered 2-1. Well, all right, if you think we should. He thought we should. So I swaggered out and jumped the coyote. I threw him to the ground while Drover nipped at his tail. I sure enough was surprised when that little coyote's uncles and cousins and big brothers showed up. All at once, I was in the midst of a coyote family reunion. Man alive, they were biting me in places I'd never been bitten before.
Come on, Drover! Don't save anything back, son! This is the real thing!
Drover had disappeared. I managed to escape with everything but 2 pounds of hair and part of my left ear. An hour later, I found Drover huddled up in the darkest, backest corner of the machine shed. I was all set to whip the tar out of him, but he cried and begged and told me that down deep, he was opposed to violence. How can you whip a dog that says that?
November the 1st.
Got into trouble today. Highloper and Slim were doctoring cattle this morning, running them through the squeeze chute and giving them shots and pills and stuff. Drover and I were hanging around, watching. The cowboys went to dinner and left all the medicine beside the chute. Drover went over and sniffed at a cardboard box full of big white pills. You know what these things are? Amino acid boluses. They're supposed to give energy to sick cattle. They're good for cow dogs, too. I walked over to the box and sniffed. Smells good, but wouldn't the cowboys be mad if we ate them? Oh, heck no. It says right there on the box that cow dogs are supposed to eat them. I squinted at the box. So it does.
I pulled one out and chewed on it. Say, that stuff was good. I went back for another one and another one, and then I went back for a second. Ha! Beat the heck out of that cheap co-op dog food. Well, before long, the box was empty. When the cowboys came back from lunch, I was sunning myself beside the chute, full and happy and feeling good. I gave the boys a grin and wagged my tail.
Highloper stared at the empty box.
Where did those...
He looked at me. I must have had a few crumbs on my chops.
Why, you worthless cur, that box cost $21.
Huh? I looked around for Drover. He had disappeared. About then, the rocks and sticks started flying, and I ran for my life. I found Drover in the machine shed, and I jumped right in the middle of him. He cried and begged, but I didn't listen this time. My mama didn't raise no fool.
Wait! If you won't whip me, I'll tell you a deep, dark, awful secret.
Huh? An awful secret?
Yeah, listen. It was all Pete's idea. He wanted to get us into trouble.
No, no fooling. He raised his right paw.
It's God's truth, Hanky.
Why, that sorry, no good for nothing cat. Come on, Drover. It's time to clean house. I marched down to the saddle shed, caught Pete completely by surprise, whipped him, re-whipped him, and ran him up a tree. Drover was behind me all the way, cheering me on.
Get him, Hanky, get him!
That was that. We went up for a roll in the sewer, and I said to Drover, boy, I can't believe Pete would pull a deal like that on us cow dogs. How dumb does he think we are? Drover shook his head.
Pretty dumb, Hank. Pretty dumb.
It's me again, Hank the cowdog. I keep getting into trouble around here. I don't know what's wrong. I try to run this ranch the way it ought to be run, but I don't get much cooperation. Take the boss as an example. He's not what you'd call fond of dogs. First thing in the morning, he'll come walking down to the corral. Most of the time, I'm already down there checking things out. I'm in charge of ranch security, don't you see? And that's such an important job, I like to get out early and make my morning rounds. So into the corral walks the boss with a scowl on his face.
I go up to him, wagging my tail and grinning and trying to be about half friendly. What does he do? He gives me this greeting.
Go on, dog, get out of here.
Every day it's the same. I don't have to do anything wrong. He just looks at me and those words come to his lips. I don't understand it. Well, all right, maybe I do just a little bit. I've made a few mistakes, but they were honest mistakes. Nothing he should hold a grudge about. I guess my troubles with the boss go back to that day last summer. I got myself locked in the saddle shed. Drover, my running buddy, had told me that there was a mouse in there, and as head of ranch security, I figured it was my duty to go in and check it out. Pete the cat is supposed to be in charge of mice, but you can't count on a darn cat for anything. So I was in there, sniffing in a corner, and the next thing I knew, the cowboys turned out the light and locked the door. That was a bad deal, me locked up and night coming on and no one out there to guard the ranch. I knew Drover couldn't handle it by himself. He's pretty tough as long as I'm out front doing the fighting and dirty work. When I'm not around, he goes up and hides in the machine shed. He won't even bark at the mailman in broad daylight unless I'm there. Well, I got in a big sweat worrying about it. What if robbers came in the night? What if the steers came up around the house and started rubbing on Sally Mae's evergreen trees? Suppose the coons pulled a sneak attack, or the coyotes came up around the house and woke up High Loper. When Loper misses his sleep, he's not fit to live with. I had to get out of there. That was all there was to it. The ranch was in danger. I reviewed the situation and decided there was only one way out. I would have to chew a hole in the door. I went right to work. I chewed and I chewed and I spit out pieces of wood and I got a splinter in my gum and it took me an hour to get it out. And then I chewed some more. About daylight, I had a fair-sized hole built in the door, but it wasn't quite big enough. Then I heard a pickup outside. Someone got out and coughed. I said to myself, aha, they've missed me and they've come to let me out. The door opened and there was the boss. He looked down at my work and looked at me. His face went red and he roared,
dang it, you're eating the door off the saddle shed. Get out of here.
That's the thanks I got for trying to do my job. Did he think I chewed up the door just because I liked the taste of wood? He took off his hat and started swinging it at me.
Go on, get out of here.
I would have been glad to get out. I had spent all night trying to get out. But since he was standing in the door and swatting at me with his hat, I couldn't get out. That just made him madder. I dashed around the saddle shed, knocked a saddle off the rack, and spilled a can of neat's foot oil. At last, I ran between his legs and escaped. He threw a hoof pick at me and missed. Well, that got his nose out of joint, and he stayed mad for the rest of the morning. We might have patched things up, but we got into another wreck that afternoon. Loper and Slim were sorting cows in the front lot after dinner. I was lying in the corrals, taking a little snooze in the sun and catching up on all the sleep I'd missed the night before. Pete the barn cat came up and started playing with my tail. I raised my head and told him to buzz off. He kept it up. He was swatting at my tail with his paws. It didn't hurt, and I tried to ignore it. But then he sank his claws in and struck a nerve. I can get along with anybody's cat as long as he knows his place. His place, as far as I'm concerned, is either out of my sight or up a tree. My second most important job on this outfit, after ranch security, is keeping the cats humble and in their place. I don't take trash off a cat. I growled and gave Pete fair warning.
best leave my tail alone, son.
Run along and play. I've got important things to do.
He looked at me and kind of cocked his head to the side. Then, out of sheer spite, he slapped my tail again.
Drover had been watching from under the pickup, and he came galloping up. His hair was bristled on the back of his neck, and he was showing his fangs.
Get lost, Squirt, or we'll...
Before Drover could finish his sentence, Pete slapped him across the chops. He yelped and moved out of range.
You're just lucky I didn't pull off one of your legs and beat you to death with it,
said Drover. Pete yawned.
Look at him, Hank. See what he did? He's got no respect for a cow dog.
Ordinarily, I would have just whipped the cat and got it over with, but I needed some sleep. I laid my head back down and fell right to sleep. I was twitching and rolling my eyes and having wonderful dreams when I felt a sharp pain in my tail. Drover was right there, whispering in my ear.
It was the cat again, Hank. I saw him. He was playing with your tail after you told him not to.
Will you shut up? I know what he did. I stood up and went nose to nose with Pete. Cat, you're fixing to get yourself into a storm.
Get him, Hanky, get him!
I told you to lay off the tail and buzz off. Now, are you gonna buzz off, or do I need to give you your daily whipping?
You tell him, Hanky. Preach him that hot gospel.
I turned back to Drover, who was jumping up and down in excitement. Will you just shut your little trap and let me handle this? Back to the cat. What's it gonna be, son? Peace and quiet, or blood and guts? Pete threw a hump into his back and hissed, right in my face. Which is one of about 23 things that I don't allow a cat to get by with. Then he popped me on the nose, and the fight was on. I lit right into the middle of him and had him buried, but he squirmed out and somehow popped me on the nose again. It made my eyes water. It stung so bad. Drover was jumping around in circles.
Get him, Hanky! Tear him up!
I couldn't quite get a handle on the squirmy little son of a gun. I chased him around the pickup once, then he ducked under the fence and ran into the front lot, where the cowboys were sorting cattle. I was in hot pursuit. Well, one thing led to another. I ran right in front of this snorty old cow, don't you see, and... The next thing I knew, she was blowing hot air on the back of my neck and shaking her horns at me. It sort of took my mind off the cat. I ran for the nearest cover, which happened to be the boss, and you might say that he got plastered. The old cow took aim for me and got the boss instead. Bedded him down slick as a whistle. Then I did my duty as a loyal cow dog. I rushed to his side and licked him on the face. He turned to me and said,
"Dang it! Get out of here!"
I can take a hint. I know when I'm not welcome. I got the heck out of there. Who do you suppose got blamed for this? Pete, who started the whole thing? The cow who did the actual damage? No, no. Good old easygoing, fun-loving, hard-working Hank. And ever since that time, when me and the boss run into each other, he doesn't say howdy or good morning. It's, go on, dog, get out of here. It's hard being a cow dog. You've got to take trash off of cats and abuse from the cattle, and you get no thanks, no respect from the boss. I guess that's why they keep me around this ranch. So that anytime somebody fouls up, they can call in old Hank and pin the blame on him. It's a cruel world.